You are listening to an edited version of Get Radio's Business Brunch, which airs every Sunday at 11 a.m. on DAB Digital Radio across Oxfordshire and online at getradio.co.uk. For copyright reasons, we cannot play the songs mentioned in the show. But for more info and Business Brunch related content, head over to getradio.co.uk.
Get Radio's Business Brunch with Ben Thompson, sponsored by We Do HR Support. Swap your HR hat for peace of mind with We Do HR Support. From compliance to training, we're your HR department. Explore how at wedo-hr.com.
Good morning, happy Sunday. This is Get Radio and welcome to the Business Brunch with me, Ben Thompson, owner of Thompson & Terry Recruitment. Every week during the show, I'm super fortunate to share the stories, the expertise, the knowledge of business leaders, large and small, with you, the listener. And this week is going to be no different. So on today's show, I'm really, really delighted to be joined by Stacey Wilson of Infinity Nation. And we're going to be talking about all things e-commerce. And I'm sure we're going to go a lot deeper into marketing as well. This is the Business Brunch with me, Ben Thompson. I look forward to welcoming Stacey after this. Get Radio. Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. Before that song, you probably heard, I'm joined by Stacey Wilson of Infinity Nation. So let's start by introducing Stacey. Welcome, Stacey, and thanks for joining us.
Hi, Ben. Great to be here. Yeah, lovely to speak to you and to all the listeners. So thanks for having me.
Oh, no, thanks for coming. So for those who don't know you and Infinity Nation, who are you and who is Infinity Nation?
Yeah, I work as COO for Infinity Nation. I've been with the company about 4 or 5 years now, but the company itself has been around since 2005. So we are long in the tooth for this kind of game. What we do is we help businesses, not necessarily e-commerce, but that's definitely our specialism, to grow through digital channels. And we try and be agnostic with the channels that we're offering and really work with business owners to map their growth ambitions and get the right strategy in place that is right for the stage of the business that they're at as well and their digital maturity.
Amazing, amazing. And really look forward to building a lot more on that over the next hour. But before that, you have kindly chosen a song for our listeners today. What is your song choice and why have you picked it?
So I chose Benson Boone, Beautiful Things. And the reason that I chose that was I think it's been played in my household for about 7 weeks on loop now. It's definitely the one that we ask the recordable device to play for us many times over. And it's, yeah, one that my children can't go a day without listening to. So when I was asked to choose a song, I thought I would defer that responsibility to the people that run my life. And that's what they chose.
Oxfordshire Station. Get Radio.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. Following that peer pressured song chosen by Stacey, we heard a little bit about Stacey and Infinity Nation. And today, Stacey's kindly agreed to join me on the radio and really share some expertise all around the world of marketing with you, the listener. So Stacey, I'm just going to start with probably quite a big, broad question, if that's okay. Just let's focus, I guess, on e-commerce. How difficult is it to sell online? Or how difficult, I think that we have a lot of businesses coming on this show who have a product, they sell, but they don't necessarily currently sell online. So if we start, I guess, the start of e-commerce, how difficult or indeed easy is it to get yourself online selling?
Well, I think that is a double-edged sword in itself. I think that the tech platforms have really outdone themselves, certainly in the last sort of 10 years. Lots of platforms are plug and play almost now, which for people that aren't skilled with running a website means that business owners that maybe had a shop before and wanted to then expand that audience, you know, the dreaded C word that we went through a few years ago, that definitely opened things up and it allowed people to keep trading and keep their livelihoods. And it was a wonderful, magical thing. I think what we're seeing now is that the market is flooded by a number of additional brands that are live on websites, and unfortunately they're all competing for the same customer base, and those customer habits have changed. So in short, I think it's really difficult to start up in e-commerce right now unless you've really developed that product offering and that service and you really know your customer. I think it's so important to make sure they're online first of all.
Absolutely. Well, one of the things you touched on there is around, I guess, that kind of C word. So COVID. How has the e-commerce landscape changed? I guess, like, if we were to look pre-COVID and post-COVID.
Yeah, so I think, you know, there's loads and loads of stats out there, but what definitely the data recorded was in 2021, there was something like 3 to 4 times the number of e-commerce businesses online, live on Companies House versus 2019. So that
Wow.
in itself is a huge shift in the way that people had to buy during that time period. And I think people would pay a little bit more, pay a bit of a premium for things during those times as well, support local. They would, you know, like the fact that they were still buying the same coffee from the same coffee shop because they were now able to order it online. And things have changed again, I think, a number of iterations since then. But I think the key thing is, like I touched on with those platforms, they've made it accessible to create a website, to find out loads of information about your customer as well. You know, integrate loads of different apps to it. In theory, it seems like child's play now, I think, going online and running an e-commerce store. But what people are struggling with more and more, we're finding, is that amplification of their product, how to get it out there, and how to compete with people that have been doing it for longer than them or have got deeper pockets than them.
No, absolutely. And I think you make a really good point there in terms of the deeper pocket piece. I guess if we were to potentially move a little bit away from e-commerce, albeit this can be relevant to e-commerce, and we were to talk about Google AdWords, for example, do you sometimes see that, of course, not with your clients naturally, but do you sometimes see that there is a risk in terms of like maybe getting a little bit carried away with I guess Google AdWords or e-commerce and maybe spending too much for that click, which would mean, I guess if we're looking at now the cost of living crisis, that actually you're maybe selling a lot but not making money on that. Is there a risk there, and what are the things you should maybe consider?
100%. I think the one of the things that I'm really glad you brought that up actually, because we're advising our clients sometimes not to invest more in paid media channels like Google Ads, Meta. The reason for that, there's a couple of key metrics that run an e-commerce business. One of them is referred to as customer acquisition cost, or CAC for short, and the other is lifetime value. And I think what we're seeing more and more is customer acquisition cost has gone through the roof in the last 2 years on some brands that we're supporting. The reason for that is because they have neglected to work on the website. Back to that point, anyone can spin up an e-commerce website. Not everyone is a search engine optimization specialist. And for those of you that don't speak digital marketing, that just means doing smart stuff with your website so that Google can read it and refers to it as good content. So what that means is you're paying for every customer that comes to the website, you're paying to get them on your books. Whereas before, people were finding you through word of mouth, referral programs, places that were a lot more sustainable for you know, keeping down that cost. So it's definitely a risk. And add to that, you know, the terms of Googleflation that's bandied around in the industry. It's definitely real. And I think there was like a whistleblower from Google themselves that came out and said, yeah, Google does inflate its prices every year. And that's definitely something we're seeing, just correlating a consistent keyword set year on year, the average cost per click is increasing in some sectors of e-commerce by around 20 to 30%. So add
Wow.
that to your existing business costs and everything, and it does sometimes price that channel out for you.
Yeah, interesting. And you did touch on SEO or organic search there. And I think that we both network, and I think that the often the I guess the equation that's often mentioned is, should I rank organically or should I pay to be there? What are the things to maybe consider whether you are going to invest in SEO? And I suppose at the basic level, to a non-educated marketeer in myself, writing lots of blogs and having lots of great content on your website, to paying a professional to go and make you rank really well organically, to almost supercharge that and as we've I guess alluded to already, pay for those clicks.
Yeah, I think that there's a place for both, definitely with any strategy. There's a great analogy, if you think SEO a bit like an oil tanker, and PPC is more like a speedboat. So it's more nimble. You can really you pinpoint, get to where you want to get to quickly. In our world, what that means is we use Google Ads, or PPC, as it's sometimes known in the industry, to test, really. So actually, do you think customers are now searching for something differently? Are they calling it something different? Are they searching for things near me now more so than they were before? We can quickly get keywords campaigns together and get data in and be able to tell you in a few weeks whether we've driven any sales from those keywords. And that's the power of Google Ads, because it's there for all to see, and sometimes to its detriment, it's too trackable. But what that does a great job of is it shows to you as a, you know, a website owner, actually, maybe I should be writing more content with these keywords incorporated. A really great tip actually is to, if you're searching for things related to your product, have a look at the questions that people are asking around that. So, you know, what is the best XXX? You know, what's the best quality? You know, how long do these things last? Should I get something with a guarantee? Reverse engineer those questions into your content, because Google loves websites that are an authority on their topic. And if it sees you as answering a need state of a customer in its eyes, it will reward you on the SEO side. So in short, I think use Google Ads to supercharge, to, you know, inject that strategy, but use SEO as a long-term, always on. You've just got to keep working on it. And to answer your point around, do you do a bit and dabble yourself, or do you get a specialist in? A colleague of mine that I used to work with many years ago used to always use the phrase, it's like the tree falling in the forest effect. So if you're writing loads of content out there, but you're not amplifying it, no one's going to see it. And that's the same with Google. So unless your website is technically accessible, and there are a number of tips and tricks that you can deploy to do that, you can write all the content you want. If you've got a blocker on a page of a website, Google isn't going to crawl it. And so you're wasting your effort. So I think if you know somebody, start there, but make sure that they're a trusted partner, because there's a lot of people that offer free SEO audits, startup packages, you know, and I think you really get what you pay for in that space.
No, absolutely. Really interesting. One of the early shows that we did, in fact, probably the first show we did around marketing, I think a phrase that always stood out to me is that you've really got three customers on your website. You've got the watchers, you've got the readers, and then you've got Google. And actually, if you're failing on one of those, it's I guess the tree in the forest analogy is a really good one to use. Something I'm just really, really keen for you to... I guess myth bust is I think that one of the, particularly with small businesses, I think that there's a real mentality, and often us smaller business owners will wear many hats. We might have a X business, but then suddenly we're the finance person, the marketing person, the sales person. And I think one of the big things that I've seen throughout running the show and networking is that you get a lot of people that might attempt Google AdWords themselves, and I think that can be very dangerous, can't it, if you don't know what you're doing and you don't know about your negative keywords. Am I right with my, I guess, kind of deducing of that, and what would be your advice on somebody that's potentially quite a small business and really kind of thinking about AdWords, and should they try it themselves or should they pay for a professional?
Yeah, really great question, I think. And in short, I've been in this industry for more years than I can count, and I'm not sure that I would be confident going into Google Ads today and setting up campaigns. I think it's actually less about keywords these days, and it's more about creative audience placement, intent of the user, the target that you want them to do. I would say start with a blank piece of paper and think about, as with any marketing strategy, who is it that you're looking to target? And I'll come on to how you can use some tools that you probably already got on your site to do that in a moment. So who are you targeting? What are you selling? What are your USPs? Really, really important there. Because if you don't know that, other people will definitely be saying that they've got, you know, attributes, etc., that you might be able to compete with. And do a few searches yourself for products like yours and see who's coming up, and just check whether you want to be in that bank of people or not. And the reason that I say that is because, going back to the audience point, if you know who you're targeting, you also know who has been to your website. So you might have been around for a number of years, and you've probably got something called Google Analytics on your website, and you'll have that there already, and you can track people that are filling in a form, or they are buying, you know, going so many stages through the process. I'm not saying you understand it inside out how to use it, but there's a section in there that will allow you to create an audience. And you could base that on people that have visited a certain landing page. So putting that into real terms for e-commerce, you might have a new product or a coming soon product. You could create an audience based on a goal that would say, build me an audience of people that have landed on this page in the last 6 months. And then you can then deploy that to look like people that you might want to target to promote that product, because not all products on your site presumably will be the same, and some might tailor to different audiences. So one thing that Google has allowed you to do is really hone on that audience. The other is sort of my point on the USPs. Years ago, certainly when I was running Google Ads campaigns, it was a few lines of text, 30 characters a limit, and maybe some site links, those sort of blue links that used to be underneath. Google now allow something like seven headlines, seven call to actions, and then you put your URL of your page in, and it will determine content for you on your behalf. So in theory, it's easier than ever to run it yourself, but you've got to feed the engine. So be clear on what you want it to show. Otherwise, be warned, Google will just take info from your website and put it in an ad and stick it live. So it's dangerous territory to do it yourself, I would say, unless you've had a hand in it before.
Absolutely. No, really, really good advice. Let's have a song and then we'll continue the conversation after this.
Interviewing Oxfordshire's business leaders. This is the Business Brunch podcast, sponsored by We Do HR Support. Leave your HR to the experts so you can focus on what you do best.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. One of the things I talk about a lot is having your notepad ready, and because that's the idea of this show is to share knowledge. And thank you, Stacey. I think most people listening at home are already going to have a full notepad, which is hats off to yourself. So one of the things that we're talking about before the break was very much about the USP piece, and I think that's really, really important. I think when a business is going online, because I think that a lot of businesses will spend money on advertising that may not be digital. A lot of businesses may be advertising on the radio or maybe going to networking events. And I guess, how important is it that your digital marketing is aligned and is consistent with your, I guess, non-digital or offline marketing?
It's so important, and to such an extent that Google, as one player in this digital landscape, will reward you for relevancy of your ad content versus what's on your website, because ultimately it just wants the customer to have a good experience. All of these like algorithm updates, as they're called, so when someone's on a much bigger paycheck than you or I are back at Google HQ course, tweak something and say, let's focus more on the quality of the content here, that means something for consumer websites, and people have got to pull their socks up and respond to it. So I think it's great just to have synergy across the whole piece, but also make sure that your comms are tailored to the platform that you're on. I think so often get quite aggressive messages on Meta, like so Facebook, Instagram these days, telling you to shop now or buy now. And actually, if we're really honest, why are you there? You're there for some downtime, for some like pointless scrolling on your phone. You probably haven't gone there thinking, oh, I really hope I get a dog food ad today. I really hope I can click through and buy on someone's site. And so I think sometimes we can actually turn people off if we're not thinking about the place that they're at and the zone that they're in on the platform.
Absolutely. No, really, 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 really good. And I think that comes really nicely on to the metrics you should be monitoring. Because I think that if we go full circle back to e-commerce or indeed digital marketing, I think that I think it's like anything, isn't it? Whether it's networking or whether it's marketing, I think that if or whether it's general business, I think if you don't have a metric or if you don't have a goal or if you don't have a plan, how do you know what success is? So what are the metrics that you can monitor in the world of e-commerce or digital marketing? And I guess, what are the metrics that you would recommend that you should definitely be monitoring? And what are kind of the optional ones, I guess?
Yeah, I think that there's too many, in short, and online. The best thing about it and the worst thing about it is it's so trackable that sometimes you can test something and it'll be the first thing that's chopped because it's deemed that it hasn't worked. I think it's really important to map the channel against the stage of the funnel that you're trying to get people in. So like the example I just used, if you're using Meta ads to target people on Facebook, you're probably introducing them to your product or service, or you're probably retargeting them with something that they've already browsed on your website, you know, to try and get them back. If you are on Google Ads, you're definitely targeting somebody who you think is closer to the point of sale. Like they're on there, they're actively searching for your product and service. If you have got someone through email, likeliness is you've already got them. You've already paid to acquire them in some sense, whether that's that they've signed up to the newsletter at some point or whether they've made a first purchase and now they're in your database. So I think the key things that you need to monitor, though, are your acceptable customer acquisition cost. So many clients come to me and say, how much roughly should I be spending on Google Ads? And ultimately my reverse question is always, well, how much can you afford to pay to acquire a customer? And so there's loads of metrics that go into that. But I think unless you understand what percentage of your overall turnover you're willing to reinvest in marketing, that's really the number that you need to understand. And then, like you say, you know what good looks like month in, month out.
Absolutely. And I think in terms of that piece, it sounds like a really good process in terms of, I guess, that reverse engineering that you work with your clients on. How can clients do the maths? And I appreciate that sounds like a very obvious question, doesn't it? But I think that a lot of people that may be listening now may be thinking, oh, okay, well, I might like to go and have a conversation with Infinity Nation, or I might like to dabble into this. And I think that sometimes I think that it's quite common that you may not know how much it costs you to get a customer. So what is the maths behind it, or what are the things to consider there?
Yeah, there's huge forecast models that, as you can imagine, that go into all this sort of thing. But stripping it back to the basics, I think what I would need to understand is, what is your average order value? So do people buy one of something? Are you a subscription business? You know, what kind of level are they putting in their basket and then checking out on an individual sale basis? How many times on average does a customer buy from you? It might be that over 12 months, it's, say, let's use supplements. They might order 6 or 7 times over a course of a year. So then you would understand that your average orders per customer over a 12-month period. And then you can start to flow actually whether you might upsell them to a different product. How many products might they be on by the end of that process? So I think I would strip it back to really speaking with a business owner about what they know about their customers. And some of that might be nothing at all. They might not have a clue where to start with that. In which case, I'd go back to an older school model of acquisition, conversion, retention. So I think we just then need to work out, how many sales do you need at what average order value to get what turnover? And then I'd probably talk to them about cost of goods, pick, pack, dispatch, you know, per order, what's that sort of cost? Because that will allow me to establish a viable cost per order, at least a starting point, like you say, a stake in the ground for that client to say, do you know what, this might be wrong, but we're going to start at £30 cost per acquisition. If we hit that, we'll then see where we can squeeze it. Or they might say, actually, no, I'm still making loads of profit. You can push it up to 50. I want more. And that would be my starting point. So I think it's kind of looking at what we need to put in the bucket to go through those phases and get out the bottom.
No, absolutely. And often I think within a lot of sectors, I think imitation is the strongest form of flattery. It's really important that you can align your business to your own values. But actually, I think that if we're looking at any sector, I think, I don't know, Marks & Spencer's are really great at advertising food on the television, aren't they? And Amazon are really good at making it really easy for people to buy online, and their distribution behind it's really strong. So I guess with that in mind, what should e-commerce businesses be considering in terms of, should they be trying to be an Amazon in terms of making it really easy for people to buy? Should they be looking at the user experience on the website or usability of their site? Should they be looking at, kind of merchandising? Like, what should be the things that you're considering when, I guess, focusing on enabling that customer to buy?
I think it's really important right now more than anything just to be honest with your customer and do what you say you're going to do. And so I think to try and compete with the likes of Amazon, it feels like you're stood at the bottom of Mount Everest about to climb it, in my view. They've just got it nailed, haven't they, in terms of that usability, that merchandising. And customers do have high expectations now, I think, of websites, because you've got to compete with not just their last purchase with you, but their last online experience. And it might be that another website was slicker. But I think what no one else can ever imitate are the reasons that you set that up in the first place, like telling your story through like a sequential advertising message on Meta or whatever is so powerful. You know, using video, having, you know, a business owner speaking about why they set it up, personalized emails from the CEO, you know, haven't heard from you in a while. I think they're the kinds of things that resonate with a customer, probably more so than we now offer split it payments on the website so we compete with everybody else. I think there will absolutely be an expectation, but I would say always start with that honesty and integrity piece and then get your values across and build up from there.
Absolutely. No, really, really good advice. Really, really good advice. Let's have another song and then we will continue the conversation after this.
The Business Brunch Podcast with Ben Thompson, sponsored by We Do HR Support. Leave your HR to the experts so you can focus on what you do best.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. If you are just tuning in, I definitely recommend listening back to the podcast or watch the video version, just because I think Stacey of Infinity Nation is really sharing some really, really good insight here. So thank you for that, Stacey. What I'm really keen to explore now, and I'm putting you on the spot a little bit, but don't worry, it's not too hard. Is I think that a lot of businesses may have their own internal marketing department, or may not have worked with an agency, or maybe considering working with an agency. So I'm really keen just to understand what would be the process of working with an agency, or indeed Infinity Nation, that is coming in fresh. And I appreciate it will vary depending on need and size of client, but what is the process of working with an agency, and how would Infinity Nation work with a client?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think something that we've had to really refine ourselves over the last couple of years is, who do our team want to work with? You know, who have been our great clients? Who have we done great things with? Who would our clients recommend us to? And you know, how do we identify more of those? And the answer was in our own sales process, actually, and making that far more detailed. So I think we position ourselves much more of a partner now with our clients, and that can take a number of shapes. Some clients want someone in the business taking all the headache off their hands. They want just to know that we're managing everything, running it, reporting it. They want us coming up with the ideas. Some have got really great people in-house. They just aren't at the forefront of every single channel, because it's like you referenced earlier on in the session. You can't be everything when you're at the top of a business, or indeed when you're in a certain post in a business. So I think sometimes clients use us just to get access to, you know, 15, 16 brains rather than the one or two they've got in-house.
Yeah.
So part of that discovery process is really engaging with the client on, who are you? What are your growth challenges? Who are your competitors? What are your USPs? You know, what's the lifetime value of your customers? Like, how sticky are they? Like, and from there, we can really get a feel as to what's going wrong with the client's current strategy. And sometimes it's nothing. Sometimes they just think, oh, we just can't scale it. Like, we've got it to a point ourselves and we just can't do any more. And in that case, you know, we're very happy to meet the role of just complementing the in-house team, doing some consultancy on a quarterly basis, injecting some new ideas, and then, you know, being that backstop. Or indeed, we've got full service clients where we do everything from data analysis right through to execution. And I would say they're the ones where we're in it. We've got, you know, account handlers there that understand that client's brand. We're doing full on growth consultancy to keep the ideas coming and keep all that flowing.
Oh, absolutely. And is it fair to say that the I guess the point that you mentioned there in terms of like the 16 minds, is it fair to say that one of the big benefits of working with an agency like Infinity Nation is that you have got those 16 minds, and actually it's a great way to be able to look at all the different methods that you can then can cover in marketing, as opposed to, I think that we've all got our own biases. So I think that, you know, if you were to employ an internal recruiter, that internal recruiter would have their own biases. If you were to employ one marketing person, they may have their own biases in terms of, I'm really good at this, so therefore the business must do that. Am I clutching the straws a little bit there, or am I on the right lines?
No, not at all. I think it's bang on. I think that when I ask clients why they are pitching their business out, so if they've asked, say, we've asked three suppliers to submit a quote, would you be interested in going forward? One of my first questions will always be, why? What's going wrong there? Because I think what we don't want to end up is in a lengthy and, let's face it, expensive process for both sides. Like, no one wants to be pitching ever, whether you're client side or agency, really. So I would always ask, what's going wrong? And more often than not, the reason that they cite is just that, just, you know, our partner, oh, we're using a freelancer and they've taken on a lot of clients, don't have too much time for us anymore. And it tends to be that the ideas aren't being injected to them. The client feels like they're having to go to their agency and say, oh, I've read that there's this new format on Google. Should we be testing this? And I guess when you're in that place with a client, that's what's going to be keeping them up at night. Like, have I got the right team around me to grow this thing? Because back to the overarching business objective, that's what you want to achieve, isn't it? As the, you know, managing director of your business, you want to hit that growth target. You don't want to have to unpick all that detail and be looking out for that stuff yourself. So yeah, we've got experts at the forefront of each of those channels in an in-house function. So that means that we can share that between us as well. So that also means that I'm quite generalist when it comes to marketing. If I needed to answer a very specific question from a client on Google Ads, I wouldn't be trying to answer it myself. I'd be going to my team and just making sure that was along the right lines.
No, absolutely. And I feel like we're going full circle now. And I want to go right back to e-commerce website platforms. So what is happening right now? What's happening with e-commerce platforms? And I guess what does this mean for marketers? What are the things to consider in terms of the changes that are happening right now?
Yeah, so think of website platforms now almost a bit like iPhones. So it's almost like you have got access to an app store where you can integrate so many things. So I'll give you an example. Years ago, when I imagine you set up your first website, I set up my sister's sort of dog walking website, I would have gone to WordPress and I would have built that website on WordPress. And I wouldn't really have known what I was doing, but I had a go at it and I coded some stuff in and plugged and played. I would say now launching an e-commerce site, it's kind of getting to that position where I could spend a few hours of an evening over a course of a couple of weeks and probably chip away and create something. So I've got my shell. I can then input my products on there, my pricing, you know, the locations I want to target. But then I access the app store and it's like an unwieldy, huge like tsunami of opportunities. So, and of course, unless you're in the industry, you just don't know what the best email platform is that you should be using. And you probably don't want to pay too much for it at first. So I think the problem with this world that we're in now is that people are going to kiss a lot of frogs when it comes to the different platforms they're testing and trialing. But equally, they're all quite inexpensive and on a monthly basis, and it's connected directly to your credit card. So if you don't get on with it, you take it off your website and you try a new one. So it's amazing, actually, the stuff that can be done now, the amount of plugins that I see going onto websites. I guess the danger, so answering your question, is you can input like an SEO plugin and assume that means that your website's optimized for Google. But we deal with some of the biggest and best sort of Shopify to name drop one sort of website platform. And for an SEO perspective, I can guarantee that our SEO manager would come back with four or five things that I hear him repeat, like every single time he does one of those audits of a Shopify site. There's just certain things that they don't take into consideration for SEO because they're building a website platform. They're not building it for SEO. So there's always things to do, I think. So you need that expert touch, but absolutely. That's why loads of e-com brands exist, because they were able to get by for a few years doing it all themselves.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. So I'm going to be a little bit negative now, if that's okay. And apologies. What are the common pitfalls? What are the things that we should avoid? What are the things that I think those listening at home and in their office should be included in their notepad and say, oh gosh, we are maybe doing that, maybe we shouldn't?
Yeah. I think my number one thing to avoid is doing something because everybody else is. I think it's so easy for owner of a business to come in bouncing into an office the next day and say, I saw our competitor ad last night, we must do this. This is what good looks like. And you have to remember, digital marketing's crafty. It's retargeting you. It knows your interests. That's why it's put that ad in front of you in the first place. It's probably not how a customer of yours is going to behave. They're not going to have that this is amazing feeling. So do your research, I think, on where your customers are, and then tailor the marketing plan around that. Don't see Billy down the road is doing Google Ads, so I better get in on that because he told me that it's really great, because he might have a car wash business and you've got a recruitment business, and they're completely different things, and people search for those services in different ways. So I think do your audience research. So like the inverse of the negative there, kind of what they're doing wrong. I think the other thing is, still years and years on from attribution modeling being like the term on the block, as it were, like 10, 15 years ago, it's still a huge headache for marketers. No one understands it, certainly in layman's terms, unless you're in the industry. So clients can make decisions that are rash. So if they can't see it tracked, there's no revenue attached to that channel in their analytics platform, let's can that off the plan next month. What we're seeing more and more is clients saying, Meta wasn't doing anything for us, so we stopped doing it. And then 2 months later, they go, oh, direct has really dropped off as a source in our analytics. And you think, yeah, that's because obviously, since iOS, that data hasn't been being passed back into analytics because Facebook and Google aren't friends. So Facebook won't give Google the data. which then means, of course, it's not going to track the number of true sales that you've had. And Meta's going to tell you it's driven you all the sales in the world, because that's what that algorithm does as well. So I think you've just got to trust your gut on it. Look at that bottom line. Don't look at all the individual lines and make decisions on them based on face value.
Absolutely. Amazing. We are coming towards the end of the show, but I think one of the things I'm really, really keen to probably plug from Infinity Nation, but also gain your thoughts on and maybe get a recommendation is, I think in the world of business, I think that it's very easy for us to do what we did last year and then do what we did the year before and then do what we did the year before. And I think it's always really important that often I think if we are stood still, we're probably going backwards because our competitors will be pressing forward. So one of the things I think is a really good tool is to have an audit done on your digital market. And I know that is something that you guys offer. So can you just talk me through what an audit is and what would be the process of somebody listening right now if they wanted you guys to do an audit for them?
Yeah. I mean, think of it as marking your homework. That's it. And it's, you know, ultimately, we'd love to build partnerships with more e-commerce brands and would welcome you all to, you know, to come along and ask me how we can help. But if we genuinely can't help because you're doing things really well, or actually there isn't much room to scale unless you significantly increase your spend, that's the sort of thing that you'd get from an audit. So what it means in practice is us having that discovery conversation that I referenced earlier. That's still really important because there's nothing worse than an audit being done without any context, because we run the danger of just telling you what you already know. We pride ourselves, and we also work with private equity partners where we do due diligence audits before they're about to do deals or invest in e-commerce brands. So they trust us to tell them where the red flags might be in these brands, whether they should invest or not. And we want to maintain that reputation. So we don't want to be one of these that just churn out the free audit from the website. So it's a very considered thing. We would, if we were all in agreement that we want to proceed, we would get access to the platforms. Our specialists would do a deep dive into those various platforms, and then we'd put it together into a really digestible format. We see so many like 30, 40 page written audits. I think really just giving you a flavor of the red flags, the amber flags, what you're doing well, where you can build on. That's typically that barometer that most people we're talking to want to know. And then you can walk away and work with your existing provider and implement some of that stuff. Or we'd welcome you obviously to engage with us on either a project or an ongoing basis to look at that kind of thing. But as I mentioned, it can take many forms, but in its basic form, a free audit is exactly that. We'll mark your homework and signpost some areas for improvement.
Amazing. Brilliant. Brilliantly put. So as the ending point of the show, I think what would be really good is to really just end with a top tip. You've given tips throughout the show, so I'm not necessarily looking for something fresh, but I guess of everything we've discussed, or even something that I maybe haven't asked, if there was just one thing for, I guess, to use the homework analogy that you would want somebody listening to highlight, what would that be? What would be that takeaway tip?
Yeah, I think play to your strengths, but I think speak to other people that are doing what you're trying to do. So one way that we do that, and this is by no means a sales plug at all, it's completely separate to Infinity Nation, but we run an events program called E-commerce Collective, which is invite only, and it's 10 to 15 senior marketers or business or e-commerce business owners that get together once a quarter. We've got cohorts across Swindon. We also go down as far as Exeter, Birmingham, Manchester, London. And those people meet up and we just facilitate the conversation. And it's a bit like today's session. You've got people in the room talking about the challenges they've experienced in the last quarter, and other business owners sat there talking about, you know, where they've had real success. And by the end of those couple of hours, everyone has taken something away, like, oh, I'm going to try that. Oh, I'm going to speak to my agency about that. So I think the best thing you can do is just to keep trying to learn how to do things better. And one of the most important things, I think, is just unlocking that by peer-to-peer knowledge. And that's a great way to do it.
Absolutely. No, couldn't agree more. And what a way to end the show. But that is unfortunately the end of the show. How quickly did an hour go? But thank you so much, Stacey, for joining us today and for sharing insight. If you are just tuning in, we've had Stacey Wilson of Infinity Nation. Well, that is the end of the show, but we are going to be back next week with some brand new guests talking about a slightly different topic next week. So we're joined by Jake Motion of House of Fun, and we're going to be really talking about really, I guess, the gap that a lot of young people have in terms of STEM and real kind of shortages that the education system have, and how really they've rolled that out to work with some F1 teams as well. So really, really interesting show. I'm looking forward to that one. Finally, just a reminder, you can listen to this show on the radio or online every Sunday at 11 a.m. There is also a podcast version, which is available on all your favourite podcast platforms, which is available on the Monday morning. And do look out for the video format so you can see all my lovely guests on the Get Radio Facebook page and the website every Tuesday. But for now, enjoy the rest of your Sunday, whatever you're doing, and I will see you next week.